This is a CBC podcast.
The cost of living is still on the rise, and politicians say they want to help us, but they just don't agree on how to do it. The Saskatchewan government has unveiled a number of measures, including increasing the amount of money a person can earn before paying provincial income tax. The opposition's been asking for breaks at the gas pumps and at the grocery store. For the latest on affordability measures and the rest of this week's political news, we've reached our panel. Adam Hunter covers politics for CBC Saskatchewan, and Murray Mandrick writes a political column in the Regina Leader Post. Morning, guys.
Good morning.
Adam, what's being debated when it comes to affordability this week?
Well, there isn't much to be when it comes to the Affordability Act that you outlined there. The opposition has agreed that they're in favor of the measures that the government took. There's about 13 in there. We're in the throne speech or in the campaign, indexing income tax, a lot of exemptions for different things, for different categories, and things like, you know, home renovation credits. Where there is some disagreement, though, and that bill's passed, where there is some disagreement is when it comes to what the NDP is pitching, which is, again, suspending the fuel tax, 15 cents for 6 months, and also removing PST on grocery items. And we had a show and tell the other day with Trent Waterspoon with a table full of groceries, you know, things like rotisserie chickens, fruit platters. And there was a back and forth about, well, eggs and produce and milk aren't tax, so quit calling them taxed from the government side, and the opposition saying, well, people buy these things every day, snack foods, granola bars, the PST should be removed. So there's no agreement there, but there is agreement on the Affordability Act.
What do you make of these opposing views on how to save us money?
Well, 50% of the province voted for this, and finally the NDP are in agreement with them. But no, they're not finally in agreement with them. This is what the NDP normal position is, that it's better to reduce taxes on the low-income side, low-income tax side, so low-income people have a choice to do with their money. You start reducing taxes on consumer items, and that usually benefits the rich. And this is a position that I would agree with and the NDP used to agree with. So the silliness of them arguing that somehow a tax on gas or removing the gas on tax for 6 months, a lot of poor people don't have cars. I don't get the NDP traditional position on this, other than I get that it's there because it has a broad base appeal to a lot of people to drive, and the NDP didn't do particularly well where a lot of people were doing the driving. So there's a fair bit of hypocrisy to the NDP position, and even more so now that they're saying, okay, well, we finally agree with the government on this position when they should have been at least agreeing with the government all along that this is a better approach, because that is the smarter traditional approach that they've advocated. I don't know how much rotisserie chicken the Witherspoon household can possibly eat, but it is a prepared food, you know, and we don't tax restaurant meals because it's seen as a luxury. There's going to be these little there's always going to be these little decisions having to made. And once again, at one time the NDP used to agree with them. This is nothing, I think, on the part of the NDP more than popular appeal. This is what the public voted for, and to be quite frank, a way better package than the alternative. Now, what they do with that money that they save or collect on these taxes is another matter. So enter the provincial auditor and on some of the matters wasted.
Yeah, let's talk about that, Adam, and what you heard from the auditor this week.
Yeah, two big ones. There's a lot in that report, but the ones that got the most attention were hotel rooms that social services paid, and that got under the spotlight with Gary Graywall. I know Ted's been talking about that in the news. The NDP's been trying to compel Gary Graywall to come forward. They're beginning shutout on that. But the auditor found that the pilot project that the government brought in the wake of all this, which was to put at some blocks of rooms aside at a couple of places to shop around for prices, that they haven't been tracking this in a way that shows, is it working? Is it better or worse? So that's one of the suggestions the auditor has. If you're going to do this pilot project, you should do it to track some data and find out if it works or not. The other thing that stood out in the auditor's report is this, and got a lot of attention in the House, was ownership of farmland and whether it's foreign or not. And there was a bit of back and forth there with the new ag minister, the premier, and the opposition leader.
And this guy too.
This guy as well. Yeah, we'll get into that in a second. The thing that stood to me from that was that the Farmland Security Board that oversees this, the auditor found that in half the cases they looked at, they weren't checking for declarations of ownership. They're also in Saskatchewan when it's after the fact. So you go check after the fact, and there, the auditor found that you're not doing this in a timely enough manner and thorough enough manner. And the third thing was, if you're actually found someone that was in violation of any of these things, there's no escalation procedures to fine or penalize. So the question remains, you know, is there foreign ownership of farmland? Well, yes, there is. How much of it is happening? Are there sweetheart deals that people are getting? Is someone turning a blind eye? Is this board not have enough resources to do the work they're doing? Is it too convoluted? A lot of questions there that the government and the Ag Minister weren't necessarily able to answer.
Yeah, Murray, I heard we played some tape of the Ag Minister and you asking questions where it sounded as though you were talking about two different auditors' reports.
Yeah, it was an alternate universe we were in at that period. I critique government policy for a living. This is what you do as a political columnist. The provincial auditor's report at the best of times is halcyon days for someone like us because it points to what's wrong and in need of critiquing government policy. There's normally a lot there. This was an embarrassment of riches. Pro tip for the government, what you don't want to do is when I can get three or four columns out of the provincial audit report, give me three or four more by the stupidity of your answers. And this is a problem that we had not just with Mr. Harrison, and I'll cut him some slack as his first scrum and maybe not really being as articulate and polished as in terms of his answers in terms of compared with other ministers we've seen in the past. But I do think this points to a large problem in this way. Agriculture has been the backbone of this SAS party government, as everybody knows. And one of the reasons is we have successive really good agriculture ministers and Bob Benrood and Lyle Stewart and Dave Merritt. And there's diverse problems in the agriculture front. But there are actually big problems that kind of actually unite and worry everybody out in the farm. And one of them is land prices. We know that land prices are going up. We know that they're going up partly because of out-of-province interests. We sometimes know who those out-of-province interests are, but we don't, as the auditor pointed out, always know. And by the way, not, as Adam pointed out, guess who's not looking into this in the depth that it needs to? The Farmland Security Board. Now, this raises questions as to why they're not looking into it. Is it a matter of resources? Is it a matter of policing? Scott Moe's answer after the mess up with the Daryl Harrison scrum was, well, what we're really talking about is illegal farmland ownership. Yeah. We now recognize, as the auditor told us, that there were 140 cases of foreign farmland ownership in the period. And but, you know, mostly we're looking at, quote, illegal farmland ownership. Well, the auditor couldn't find it. So in essence, Scott Moe was asking for a tip line. If you know any cases, phone. No, that's what the Farmland Security Court. This isn't turned in a poacher. This is basically dealing with a very serious issue, to be quite frank, that requires probably a good investigation, good investigative reporter to take through a thorough look at land titles as to how many of these go through. But the reality is there's 40,000 of these in the province each year, and that might not even be the biggest issue in terms of land action. It might be in the area of leasing, as the provincial auditor said, where it's even harder to track. So we need to take this seriously. And I guess one of the problems the government has right now, beyond the fact that they can't articulate the problem or even acknowledge it while everybody in rural Saskatchewan is whispering about it, is the fact that there might be this suspicion that these are people that are doing political donations to the party, et cetera. For their own sake, they probably would be wise to take a serious look at it, as opposed to giving people like me fodder for another 15 columns.
Adam, is there anything else that you'll be watching for from this week into next week? Does it all wrap up next week?
Yeah, it wraps up on Tuesday, so it's very quick. Okay. The one thing that kind of that just it's the House drama that happens. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 8:15 in the morning, Murray and I are watching committee. It's sorry, everyone. But there was a situation. There's a situation where the NDP wanted to raise a motion to have Gary Graywell testify or also have a motion to investigate northern food prices. And Mira Conway got in some hot water from the speaker yesterday because she posted a video of the committee meeting where the new chair, Michael Weger from Weyburn, is, you know, doing his thing, and there's a hand up from Maria Conway in the video. There's a hand up from Colleen Young, the minister from the government side. The clerk kind of whispers in the ear to Michael Weger, hey, Mira Conway has her hand up. He goes to Colleen Young. Colleen Young asks for an adjournment, and Mira Conway doesn't get a chance to bring her motions up. That day, Tim McLeod came out, the government health leader, said, well, they didn't follow the proper protocol, or we didn't know about this, you know, kind of saying these things. That brings Nicole Saar out, who says, I wasn't expecting to do a scrum today. I'm the opposition health leader, but I send a text message with a screen showing our motions. I don't have to do that. We can just raise a motion. We don't have to give them advance, but I was giving them advance notice. Now we have these shenanigans going back and forth where we maybe can't trust them. They're not listening to us. They're not following along. Then yesterday, they raise a point of order in the House saying that Mira Conway can't post a video to social media because you have the permission of all the people in the video, which breaks a rule. And the speaker voted in the government's favor there. And Mira said she would take it down, or already did take it down and apologize. So these things are happening behind the scenes. And there's some, you know, it's the talk about, you know, making a bridge. That was short-lived. The bridge seems to be cracking already.
Yeah, you were telling us things were pretty quiet and decorum was pretty good.
Yeah, boy, was I stupid. new beginning. Same old stuff, but, you know, a new beginning in which we can't set a precedent, unless, of course, the precedent is that we MLAs can't post videos of them in committee, in public committee meetings, TV videos that are otherwise being shot for whatever reason. I don't know. I suppose it catches their spirit and they don't go to heaven. It's just ridiculous. Like, somebody else will post it on social media. And, oh, by the way, if you're moving this, that MLAs can't post videos of their own damn meeting, you're setting a precedent. So I thought you guys were about not setting precedents, as in we can't set the precedent of Gary Graywall going forward to testify. We can't seem to set a precedent of maybe taking a committee look into the affordability of groceries in northern Saskatchewan where we're having scurvy outbreaks. But we can set a precedent that, oh my goodness, MLAs cannot post their videos of each other when we're basically screwing over the opposition. It's ridiculous. It's the same old silly political games. Sans Jeremy Harrison sitting quietly watching his phone and not looking up. And we have a speaker that's being horribly naive in terms of this. And that might be the kindest thing I can say about him. It was a bad ruling and a not very thoughtful ruling. If he chooses to have any credibility, he's going to have to start ruling against government silliness at some particular point in time, because we're right back a week into the session, back to the government silliness, and it's in the House. It extends outside the House, where we have to beg, cajole to get a minister out while they're sitting in the back of the House gossiping with each other because they're, quote, too busy to talk about the provincial auditor's report on housing and social services. We didn't even get to the notion that we have a housing crisis in Regina and there's 500 units sitting in disrepair or empty while people are living in the streets or battered women are begging to find a place of safety for shelter. And there's these serious issues here that they somehow can't get a minister out to talk about or respond to in a particular way because they don't seem to have people that can respond as effectively as they did in the past. And I think this is going to frustrate people very quickly because it's the same old political games that they promised they wouldn't be playing.
Thanks, you guys.
You're welcome.
You're very welcome.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.